Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Sports Breakfast this Thursday, the 30th of June. And it's always exciting, isn't it, when you wake up on a Thursday morning and you think, yep, we've got Thursday night footy tonight, and what a game it is between Melbourne and Manly. A very good morning to Jamie Rogers, Ryan Phelan with you. And Jamie, we've let the dogs out for the next couple of days. Yes, Dean Bulldog Richie is in with us. How are you, dog?
Good morning, Ryan. Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning, Bulldog.
Great to be sitting in the chair of the great Laurie Daly. Hope I can
that's
do
Clarkie's
it justice.
Chair.
This is Clarkie's.
That's Clarkie's okay. Chair.
Yeah,
I've,
so if you're Clarkie, you've got to... You got to take deep breaths every once in a while before you say something, you know.
I reckon I should fill in for Clarkie. My bat and pad were never quite as close together as Michael's.
Yeah.
There is a different feeling when you wake up on a Thursday morning, as I say, and you know you've got a great game of footy that awaits you that evening. We've got Melbourne taking on Manly at Four Pines Park. Gee, what a game it promises to be, particularly now that Cameron Munster has been ruled out of State of Origin. It's always the big talking point, isn't it? Out of Origin, who backs up? And there's probably no bigger name that is not backing up. Yes, we know that Kalyn Ponga won't be playing for Newcastle, but probably Cameron Munster will be the biggest withdrawal this weekend. Again, in a very spiteful and important game for both clubs.
Yeah, it certainly will be. You'd think that there'd be a decent crowd down there. JR, look, it's been a great rivalry for many years, but no, Munster does sting for the Storm. Ryan Pappenhausen, back from COVID, will start at fullback. And as I understand, I spoke to Craig Bellamy last night, the plan is that Nick Meaney would push in to play six. So the Storm knocked around a bit. Bellamy even said, look, he'll wake up this morning and still won't know the extent of his side because of injuries. But Manly are settled. And their two Origin players, Cherry Evans and Jake Trbojevic, are available.
You know, the big one for me, boys, looking at this round ahead, the Roosters are $6 to beat the Panthers. That's their longest price since 2011. Now, that really shows the tough position that they're in. And Bulldog, it is on the back page of today's paper, but Joey Manu has been moved to go into 5'8", and that's a way to try and reignite their season, I suppose. And there was all those reports yesterday that Matt Lodge has signed for $100,000 for the rest of the season. I'm a Rooster supporter, so I'm looking at you and thinking, like, what do we now do? Is this the right decision to move Joey Manu into that 5'8" position? Obviously, this is off the back of Luke Keary out with the head knock.
Yeah, look, it's a move that they believe can try to trigger something in their attack. There's something missing at Bondi this year, JR. They're just not the side that they were, and it's not the side that Trent Robinson wants them to be. So they need something just to ignite the Roosters, to rejuvenate them, and they think Manu is the man to do that. Basically, it's an old cliche, but they want him to get his hands on the ball more than what he is out there at centre, and he's obviously in wonderful form given that New Zealand game last week against Tonga. He ran for, I think it was 362 metres, just an extraordinary individual performance for Joey Manu. So, look, Drew Hutchison was named at six. He'll go back to the bench. Manu will start in the halves, and that leaves Paul Momorowski to come in at right centre.
Yeah, but just back to that Manly game, it just kicks off the round in great fashion, doesn't it? Because we talk about Manly Melbourne. As far as rivalries go, we know there's a lot of great rivalries in the NRL, but this is probably one of the great modern rivalries. Obviously, goes back to the grand finals and to the Melbourne Storm being stripped of their points for salary cap breaches, the Battle of Brookvale. There's a lot of spite between these two sides, isn't there? And the coaches probably feel the rivalry too.
It's unbelievable. What about this, Ryan? Dez and Craig Bellamy have met 34 times. It's 17 all. So that's a 50% success rate for Dez, which I think puts him at number one against Craig Bellamy. I think everyone else is beneath Dez in terms of percentages. That just shows how good Craig Bellamy is, that there's not one person above Dez over 50%. And what about this too? Bellamy's sides have scored 588 against Dez. Dez's side 562 against Melbourne. So that means over 34 games, only 26 points splits them, which is quite remarkable.
Yeah, it sure is. Felice Kafusi also, we talk about Origin players that won't be backing up. He won't be backing up. This is quite a, well, I guess a concerning story. So we mentioned yesterday on the show that he had flown to America to be with his dad. So It seems as though his dad was holidaying in Hawaii, and he got a bit of a gash to his leg, which has become infected. So he's currently in intensive care. That's a real concern. So Felice has flown over there, which could potentially put him in doubt for Origin 2, depending on how things play out.
Yeah, Craig Bellamy,
Origin 3, sorry,
said yesterday that there's no return date for Felice just yet. His father, as you said, Taniela, is in intensive care. Clearly, he won't be there tonight. And Origin 3, you'd have to think, would be in doubt as well. Just before I move away from Origin 3 too, Ryan, I spoke to Bellamy about Munster, and they are still fairly confident, the Melbourne Storm staff, that he would be available for State of Origin 3. So he'll miss tonight, but all being fair, he would play in the decider up there at Suncorp, which is a huge boost, because if they lose Munster, that is a massive blow to Queensland. Mm.
Just while you're talking about Queensland, you see in today's paper, the Queensland official said they're not going to go whinging to the refs.
That'd be a
basically
first.
Basically having a stab at Brad Fittler after his comments in game one.
That'd be a first. Queensland not whinging after a loss.
It's funny, isn't it, the way that Origin is attacked by the coaches nowadays. It's almost like this is a season where, I guess, the glaring, shortcomings in the process have been revealed. I could never understand for the life of me why New South Wales picked their team earlier. I'm sure it's got something to do with Channel 9 and being on the news on a Sunday night, perhaps. Something like that, I don't know. But it pretty much gives Queensland a free hit to have a look at their side and counter, which is where Freddie Fittler got caught with his pants down, so to speak, and having to make 7 wholesale changes in game 2. So then it evened up for game 2, I suppose, as the side is concerned. Now Billy Slater has seen, okay, well, I can see now what this new side can do ahead of game 3. So you feel like it's even. So it's the process that happens with State of Origin, and how, I guess, the shortcomings of that process of picking the teams, you know, has been revealed through this series. Would you agree?
Yeah, well, we as in New South Wales will pick our side on Monday, this coming game. It's normally been on Sunday. A lot of people on social media say what you're saying, Ryan. Why do the Blues come out first? Whether it is the news, I'm not sure. But I don't think it matters who comes out first in terms of that's the side we're going to pick. We've worked on this for weeks now. Mm. And if it comes out 24 hours earlier than Queensland, we don't particularly care. But you're right. It does seem a bit of a discrepancy that one side picks theirs a day before the other.
Mm. There's been some big signings overnight. The Dolphins, well, they just continue to look at the Penrith Panthers, and why wouldn't they? Wayne Bennett has signed Nathan Cleary's understudy, Sean O'Sullivan, as his foundation halfback for next season. SG Ball captain Mason Teague looks like he's going there as well. So they join Isaiah Katoa, Harry Hassett, Rob Jennings. So that is a lot of Penrith stock going to the Redcliffe Dolphins at the moment. So things are starting to look on the upward spiral there for Queensland, for the Queensland team as far as the signings are concerned.
Yeah, I still think they're a couple short. That's my gut feeling. They've built a solid roster without the superstar that they thought they would get. I firmly believe Wayne Bennett thought, given his reputation, that he would be able to lure 1, 2, even 3 stars up there, and it hasn't happened. Mm. I think Bennett privately would be a bit miffed that his aura hasn't quite worked in this situation, but Sean O'Sullivan is the backup halfback for Nathan Cleary. Of course, he's done a good job earlier this year when he was called in. His father, Peter O'Sullivan, is the Dolphins recruitment manager, so you'd think he was always going to go there at some point. But I asked it yesterday, guys, and I'll ask you guys today. You know, the Dolphins had to come in at some point, but are we a year short? Did they need one more year to really come in as a strong club? Because if they come in that first year and they run down the bottom, it's not a good look for rugby league. It's not a good look for the Dolphins. It would certainly hinder their chances of crowds, membership, and fan support.
It's interesting you pose that question, Bulldog, because I literally, when I was reading about the Dolphins signing Sean O'Sullivan, that was my first thought was, gee, they haven't picked up their big-named player. Are we going to see them at the bottom of the ladder, which would be a disastrous result? You do not want to see a new club come in and be the wooden spooners, I don't think. And so I'm with you that probably we needed another year just to be able to get those big-name players, and not just to get a bit more of the momentum behind it, because I don't think there's that much. Maybe there's not that much excitement around the team because they haven't picked up a big named player, but that was exactly my thoughts yesterday when I was reading about that signing.
They need the billboard player. The face is going to...
Yeah.
When you drive into Redcliffe, you're going to see this bloke everywhere.
Yeah. How do they market the team?
A Ponga, a Trbojevic, a Tedesco. I mean, clearly those three aren't going to go there. I'm using those as examples. But the bloke that's going to be meeting with the sponsors, the marketing, the membership, the bloke who's going to be on the merchandise, they just haven't got that player yet. They're short of where they need to be.
Well, I grew up in Redcliffe, and I will support the Dolphins when they come into the competition. And I, like many people, thought Wayne Bennett might have had a little bit more clout. Yes, it seemed as though there was a bit of a clock ticking before the season would roll around and they had to fill a side. I honestly thought that Wayne Bennett would have a bigger fish by now, and I wonder whether he maybe has a couple on the hook or just about that we don't know about, because his pulling power is strong. There is a lot of appeal to playing in Queensland. I think Redcliffe would be a great place to be based or to train and play.
Why aren't they getting anyone, Bulldog?
Well, for next year, they might miss out. But as Ryan says, maybe for 24, and they have to sacrifice 23 their first year to be successful. I just don't think at the moment the players want to go there for that very reason. Ryan, I'll ask you, you're obviously a Queensland born. The Broncos have such a domination in Brisbane and have since 1988. If Redcliffe come in and perform poorly in their first 1, 2, 3 years, how bigger and significant impact will that have on that club in terms of support?
Well, when there was a suggestion that it was going to be the Brisbane Bombers, I thought this would be an absolute failure, because you can't have two teams named Brisbane. We just wouldn't get behind it. Redcliffe has a very strong foothold in the QRL and has for a very long time now. They have a lot of players that have come through that club and have gone on to NRL level. Petro Sivanasiva and Mick Crocker are just a couple that come to mind. So it's a club steeped in history. What does concern me with a lot of Southeast Queensland teams is it's been a bit of a vortex for sport. Look at the South Queensland Crushers. They failed. Look at how many Gold Coast identities that have failed. The Brisbane Broncos have always been strong and solid. I do have concerns that there is a history there that, you know, I know there's been a lot of people that have said there's statistics that will be able to support a second team in Brisbane. History will say that sporting teams don't necessarily thrive in that part of the world. So it's going to be an interesting exercise, and they've got to get it right from the get-go. They've got to get a lot of people that are on the fringe.
It's interesting too, we spoke off air about the Bears. Just about expansion, Ryan, I met with the Bears in Perth last week, Daniel Dixon, their chairman, and Billy Moore, and we spoke about Redcliffe and what they're going through. When you break it down, guys, and I'd be interested to get your thoughts here, where do the Bears go? Say the Bears get the license. Peter Vellani says, it's yours. But where do they go? Because when you think about it, there isn't a lot of options. We've got Perth, which is a long way away. They won't go back to Brisbane now, Ryan. As you say, one was enough for years. Two will be more than enough now for the next decade. North Queensland's looked after. There's a rural proposition. Maybe they might base themselves out of Coffs Harbour. But Christchurch is another one, Wellington, but it's a very interesting and fascinating debate as to where the Bears go. Well, because they're ready to go, but where?
Well, I tell you what, they have had struggle filling AFL stadiums this season, post-COVID, and to see Optus Stadium the other night with, what was it, 61,000 fans?
It was a sellout.
Is
that because it was just the one-off origin? Would they continue to rock up every single week when the Bears would be playing, I guess, is a different question.
But what a time to strike. You know, it's hot in the minds of the government over there seeing a full stadium when they haven't been able to fill it. And the West Coast Eagles, for example, have been going like absolute bustards. It is a good time to strike. So well done to them, you know, for having those meetings and striking while the iron's hot, because it's probably the right time to do it.
So what were they saying when you met with them?
They were going to meet with some WA League officials, and then on Monday they were actually going to meet with members of Parliament. Oh. So they were going quite a way toward the top of WA in terms of high flyers. They wouldn't play out of Optus Stadium. Mm. Maybe take a couple of marquee games there, but they wouldn't be able to fill out every week. But you think of the enormity of the task, though, like membership up against AFL, you know, marketing, sponsorship, grassroots, you know, junior footy, starting off junior footy, trying to put rugby league balls in kids' hands. And it could be 10 years before you get a local player.
The one thing that I am concerned about, I mean, even though the Dolphins are called the Dolphins, to me and many others, they are the Redcliffe Dolphins because they have a footprint in that area. I worry about merged entities. I still think with West Tigers, to me, they're neither the Tigers nor West. You know, they're a new entity, but I don't feel that they necessarily represent either of what those clubs were. I'm not a fan of West Tigers, so I can't speak like many other people can. But to me, I don't think of them as West or Tigers. Would people that supported the North Sydney Bears think the Perth Bears are the North Sydney Bears or a new Perth team? It's always the conundrum with the merged entity.
It is. Look, and you're right, Ryan. I've asked the same question. If you're a rusted on Bears fan, would you support the Perth Bears? Personally, I don't think I could. Having said that, when you've been booted out of the comp and you were in 1998, you're still waiting for top flight rugby league, it's better than nothing.
Well,
it's better than what you've got.
Middo is all for it. And especially because he said that they, if it was the North Sydney Bears, even if they're out of Perth and they would hopefully still bring some games to North Sydney Oval, I think that would then maybe tickle your appetite if you were a North Sydney Bears fan and the fact that you are back into the competition. Because that's Jared. He is a North Sydney Bears fan, as he keeps telling everyone, and he wants to see them back in the competition.
Do Perth want the Bears as their logo, their entity? Or do they want a fresh team? Do they want their own logo? You know, do they want an old foundation club which has got wonderful history, but maybe people over there don't want the Bears in terms of
recyclable Western Reds.
Exactly. They want a fresh start. They want a fresh club. You know, they might not particularly gravitate to a club that is a Sydney club being relocated. There's a million questions about the Bears at the moment, but I think the bottom line is I know Peter Volandis loves the Bears. He loves their brand, their history, and I think at this point in time, the Bears are shaping as the 18th team. When that is, 25, 26 maybe, they want the 18th team for broadcast purposes. Perth also, Ryan, as you pointed out before, ticks a box in terms of broadcasting and that the games could flow on all day on Fox Sports.
We've had a good old gas bag in that section, haven't we? So we probably won't have time to do the headlines as we normally do them. But, of course, we will bring you the headlines throughout the program of other things such as Wimbledon and what's been going on over there. Tanasi Kokkinakis, unfortunately, lost to Novak Djokovic in straight sets overnight. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. And the cricket yesterday, the Aussies got off to a good start thanks to Nathan Lyon. He took 5 for 90. But the door has been left slightly ajar after a few wickets before stumps finishing at 3 for 36. So we'll talk about the cricket a little bit later. But some great guests on the show today. What about these? Josh Reynolds is going to be joining us from, where is he at the moment?
I'll
is
be
he,
amazed if he
is
actually
he France
calls in.
Or
so can we
Spain
make sure we,
or something
he's in
like
Barcelona
that?
With our
he's,
boss.
That's right. He's over there with our mate Ben Lloyd. So he's going to be our first guest just after 6 o'clock. Paul Gow will join us to talk golf. Adam Pengelly will join us from the Sydney Morning Herald. Steve Blocker-Roach is in the studio
big fella.
With us. Yes.
I spoke to him yesterday. He's all excited.
He's very excited. I saw him on Tuesday as well.
He's like great. I love his Thursday hour.
Legend.
AFL will talk with Shane Crawford as well. Brad Davidson will join us. Damien Cook. That's a big show. It's almost too much show. It's the Big Sports Breakfast. Stay with us this Thursday. Great to have you with us this morning. The open line number 1353 53 53 and the SMS as well is 0419 767 272. Would love you to be part of the show. It's great to have Dean Bulldog Richie in with Jamie and I this morning. Plenty of rugby league news around, and the highlight, of course, was last Sunday evening, wasn't it, with State of Origin 2 and a big win for New South Wales. And despite being on the other side of the world, I'm sure he would have been watching with great interest and much delight to see that performance. Josh Reynolds joins us. Good morning, Josh.
Hey, guys. How are we?
Very, very well. Where were you where were you watching the game from?
I was actually watching it just at home at the moment, obviously. I haven't got a job at the moment, so I just watched it at home. But yeah, no, I think it was a great win for the Blues. obviously Queensland won the first game, and for me, I think they're on a bit of a roll. But I think Nathan Cleary was just unstoppable, to be honest. And I actually spoke on the show last week and said Appy Coruscant was just. I think he was the difference, to be honest. And Cookie wouldn't have liked probably going to the bench, but for me, I think that's probably what won the Blues the game. It changed their point of attack, and it's 1-1. And yeah, hopefully the Blues can get a final win back up in Queensland, which will be tough.
Josh, what did you make of Matt Burton's debut?
Yeah, it was unbelievable, to be honest. I just love for him how he can play 5-8 week in, week out for the Bulldogs, but then, you know, he can play Origin in the centres and have a game like that. Whenever I watch Matt Burton, I just feel that he's just cool, calm and collected. Everything he does is perfect. Nothing seems to faze him. And that's for me, that's why... If I was the Bulldogs right now, I know there's a lot of contract talk, but I'd be keeping him for as long as I could, because he's the perfect player. He does everything right, and they've been talking about he's worth a million, but I think he is. I think he's the Bulldogs need right now, and I keep him for a long, long time.
Hey, Grubb, it's Bulldog. Before we continue with Origin, where are you and are you behaving? Because I've got worries.
That's where
Grubb.
I was coming from.
Worries.
I thought he was on the other side of the world somewhere at the moment.
I'm not going to tell you exactly where I am.
We can just look on social media.
It's on Instagram.
It's on Instagram.
Josh.
You look like you're having a terrible time.
Yeah. It's a terrible time. But, yeah. I'm actually in Barcelona right now, and I'm having a great time with a couple of great people that yous would know very closely.
Right. Yes.
And yeah, but for me right now, you know, it's hard for me because you know, like I'm trying to get something set in stone for now or for next year, and but at the same time, I'm enjoying my time.
Good for you, Grubb. So, Josh, you're not retired, are you? Let me just make that clear. And you're obviously looking to stay in Super League, is that right?
No, I'm definitely not retired, mate. But to be honest, no, I want to come home. I want to play in the NRL. I've got one more year left in me, and it's been a bit of a tough trot for me over here. But I think if I come back home and train to my best ability, I honestly think that I could hopefully get a number in a squad, and you know, I do my best. But if it isn't going to work, like it is what it is. So I'm just going to do my best and hopefully come back to a club back home.
Josh, your experience, your utility value, you'd be a great. Obviously, 14 if need be, or you can play in the halves. You've played Origin, so I know you don't want to particularly self-promote too much, but gee, I reckon you'd be a handy pickup.
Well, actually, Bulldogs, like, mate, honestly, like, I'm probably past that point now where I understand like what I am right now, and for me to, I understand if I come into a club or a team, I'd be a 14 or wherever they need me to be, and I'm okay with that. It's just, you know, obviously in life you've got to accept, you know, what's going on and whatnot. So for me right now, if I got, you know, any contract or whatever with any team, I'd just train my backside off and do my best. And, you know, I'd hope people know that's what I want to do. And that's why, you know, I hope I can add a bit of value to a team.
So, Josh, what would be your pitch, I guess, to someone like a Wayne Bennett, who's looking for players at the Dolphins at the moment, for example? What do you bring to a side at the moment? You're saying you're happy to have any number of 14, but what's your pitch to clubs at the moment?
Well, for me, really, like it's hard. Like I'm 33 years old, and you can't like shy away from that fact. But I hope that, you know, like coaches or clubs know what I'm about. And, you know, I haven't been in the NRL for a couple of years, but at the same time, I love to think that people still know what I'm about. Like that, honestly, like, because, like, even when I was in my prime, I wasn't the best player in any team or in a comp, but I'd always work my backside off to, you know, to give my all to the team. And so I still think, well, sorry, I still hope that people think that about me. And it's just one of those things, isn't it? You know, like, it's either people want to take a chance on me or they don't. But for me, I'm in good shape. I just want to train my backside off and get into a team, and that's pretty much it. Like I know it probably sounds silly, but yeah, I just want to get back into a team and work my ass off and get back into a first place spot. Mm.
I reckon you'd be a great addition to your old side, the Bulldogs. What do you make of their recent run of form, Josh?
Yeah, they've been great, haven't they? I've always, Jamie, like I've always, you know, had a bit of a connection with them, and I think at the moment they're heading in the right direction. I really do. You know, as I was speaking before, like, I think Burton's just a next generation type of player, and they've got to keep him. But I think they're slowly like finding what it means to be a Bulldog. They're winning games on the back of just hard work and effort, and that's how I suppose for me, that's how we used to win games. And I think for me, it's a big thing that, you know, they've obviously, they got to find a new coach and whatnot, and that's going to be a big thing for the club. But in general, if I had to, you know, say something right now, I think they're heading in the right direction. You know, that they're all playing for each other, and that's what matters. But that's all that matters, really, because if you're playing for each other and winning games, that's what you want. So I think you're heading in the right direction.
Josh, you're a legend at Belmore. The fans always loved you. Who would you like, just personally, to see as Canterbury's new coach?
It's a big call, Bulldog, you know, because, like, for me, I think it should be someone who's Bulldogs, right? But it might not happen. So, I think for me, like, and he's probably going to ring me, mess with me tomorrow and be like, mate, what are you on about? But I think, like, someone like Nick Ennis would be a perfect, you know, candidate for the job. I know he wants to be a coach, like, maybe not right now, but, like, further down the track. And for me, ever since I've been at the Bulldogs, it's always been about the people that want to be there. And, you know, you've got people like, you know, I've seen Jim Dimmick thrown up, and I think it'd be perfect. I just think whoever knows the Bulldogs should be the coach. And I know, you know, Sorrento's been thrown up, and I'm sure he'd be a great coach, but, yeah, for me, it's just, if you're a Bulldog, you're a Bulldog, and you'll never change that.
And as you correctly pointed out, passion for the game often goes a long way in the coaching arena. Is that something you would consider post-career?
No, not for me, mate. I want to be a part of the club, I really do, and that's, but definitely not coaching. Like, I definitely want to be a part of it, you know, whether I can come back there and play or have an impact on the club. But yeah, it's definitely not something for me, but I'm Bulldog through and through, and, you know, I think everyone knows what it means to me and what impact I have to have on the club. So yeah, I really hope they find a good coach and, you know, head them off.
Josh, before we let you go, I just want to go back to Origin quickly, because there's been a lot of debate and discussion about whether Latrell Mitchell, if he performs well this weekend with his first game back since he was injured back in April, would you slot him into the Origin side for Game 3?
It's just fun, isn't it? Because I suppose when Queensland went on such a good run, they picked and sticked, right? if players weren't going that great, they were still picking them and putting them in the right position. For me, I think you have to look at Trelin because he's a player that can change the game. And it might be hard because, you know, Burton might miss out or, you know, Cryan might miss out. But at the same time, you know Latrell is going to do something. You know, he's never going to let you down. And, you know, like Eddie knows that. He knows the Origin arena. So for me, it would be a hard decision, but I'd be picking him.
With State of Origin, Josh, back in the 2013 series, obviously, even though you were selected for Game 1, you didn't actually run on the field. Your actual run-on debut, so to speak, was at Suncorp Stadium. Just speak to, the challenge that New South Wales face in Game 3 when you've got a ferocious Queensland crowd and getting it done. How much of the game feels different when you're playing up there at Suncorp?
You know what, mate? It's very hard. But I think right now that the way the Blues won that last game, the dominance they won it in, and they won it very, very convincingly. I don't think it will have a bit of an impact, but not a lot because it is hard to win, you know, up in Queensland and whatnot. But I just think the Blues last week, that they made a statement, a massive statement. Like, I'm not even talking, you know, they won by 30-odd points, and that is huge. So I think, you know, we're all going to say, like, it's going to be hard to win in Queensland, but they've got, Cleary, Luai, Coruscant, a lot of players that just, the moment, doesn't seem to worry them. So I think they'll be fine, and I think they'll win Game 3, and the choice will be coming home.
Grubb, tell me, are you drinking those cocktails with the little, the little umbrella?
It's called sangria, isn't it?
Yeah, the little umbrella in it by the pool or not?
Look, Bulldog, I'm not, you know me, I'm not, I can't, I'm here, but I can't tell you exactly what I'm doing.
Grubb, you know, I've got spies everywhere. I'll find out.
I know you've got spies, you know what, I know you've got spies everywhere, but I can't tell you exactly
what. One of those spies could be very close to you.
Yeah, it could be messaging you right now.
Yeah. Oh, well, Josh.
Hey, you know what? I'm having a good time.
Good for you, mate.
Enjoy, Josh.
And you deserve it,
thanks,
mate.
Guys.
And great to talk to you. And as we were saying, hopefully we will see you back here in the NRL very, very soon. You're a much-loved character and you're getting a lot of love on the text line this morning. So thanks for joining us, Josh.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Josh Reynolds joining us on the Big Sports Breakfast. It was great to talk to Josh Reynolds, and you just think of certain players that come back, and yes, they may be past their prime, as he even admitted himself in that particular interview, but the worth that they can bring to a club. I remember when Wayne Bennett went to St. George Illawarra, he brought, you know, Wendell Saylor back into that club, and just his mentorship with some of the younger players, even particularly Jamie Soward at that particular time, was profound. We saw Benji Marshall, you know, in recent times as well, and the effect that he can have on a club. So it's not just about what the skill set you bring to that particular role, it's the wider role that you can play in a group that is very important as well.
When you're 33, Ryan, it's not always, as you say, about game day on the field. It's what you bring to the club through the week. Josh has always been the hardest trainer. He brings a great culture. He brings a great attitude. He'd mentor the young kids. He's played at Origin level. He won helped win the Origin series in 14, that famous side which Laurie coached to snap the 8-year domination. He's done it all, Josh Reynolds, and I think he'd have to take a massive pay cut. He knows that. He's not silly. But if you wanted to bring a bloke in to improve your culture, and if you've got a young, developing squad, to improve that area as well, I think he would be absolutely ideal.
Bulldog, where would you, if you were an NRL club, which one would you see him fitting into nicely?
Oh, gee, good question, Jamie. I'm probably thinking of a younger squad, maybe, I mean, I don't think he'd go back to the West Tigers, but a developing squad where a coach is looking for an on-field coach who can help the young kids and mentor them and teach them how to do it right and teach them what to do on the field, but teach them what to do off the field, how to behave. It's a real, almost like a mentoring role. And if you can get 20, 30 minutes out of him on the weekend, that's added bonus.
Taking your calls this morning, 13 53 53. Let's go to the open line number. Good morning, Shane.
G'day, Ryan. How are you, mate?
Very well. What have you got for us?
Look, I want to talk about Matt Lodge, but just before that, Bulldog, it'll be the Perth Bears 2026 for the simple fact that Foxtel won four live games on a Super Saturday, and they won that 9:30 live time slot coming out of Perth. Mm. So that'll be a done deal.
It was not a done deal, I can tell you that. But look, certainly, you know, there is interest there, Shane, but it's not a done deal. But yes, look, you're right. Fox do want the extra game, and the Bears do want to come back. So the stars are aligning, but I think it's a long way from done.
Rhino, just on the Dolphins, good to see they sign up young O'Sullivan. They've got Katoa there. They get Josh Reynolds. They get Milford. I am hearing still at the moment that Cody Walker will get an early release because he wants to move back north. So they'll be stacked in the halves. And people that are writing off the Dolphins have got to think of their money ball. They don't expect to be in the top eight, but they'll finish above the West Tigers, the Bulldogs, the Titans and the Warriors. They'll be competitive in their first year and they'll build from the ground up. And Ryan, it's not Redcliffe. Redcliffe's their reserve grade side. It's just the Dolphins, mate, just the Dolphins.
I know, but if you've supported the Redcliffe Dolphins and you see the Dolphins, to you they're always Redcliffe is my point. But I think for the wider rugby league community, I think it's great that they branded them the Dolphins. I thought it would have been a mistake if they called them the Redcliffe Dolphins. I think the Dolphins is what they should be known as.
But Shane, why? I hate this. Why are Redcliffe embarrassed by their geographical link? Every Sydney club's got a link. I just don't see why they don't want to be known as Redcliffe.
I think if you look,
shouldn't they be loud and proud about their area?
But if you look in a global sense too, if you're attaching it to youth, and you know we want to grow the game, you look at American sports in particular. They're known by their franchise name and their mascot rather than their geography. I thought that was a smart move. I mean, we want to grow the game of rugby league, and I think if you call it Redcliffe, it probably localises it too much. But calling it the Dolphins, I think, you know.
But all those American franchises have got names, like the Dallas Cowboys, San Francisco 49ers.
Cleveland Browns.
They're clinging to their geographical link. Yeah. I just don't know why they want to shift away from that. Having said that, the Bears are doing the same thing. They've got rid of North Sydney. Mm. They are just known at this point in time, in terms of their bid, as the Bears.
But that's because they want to potentially end up in Perth, whereas the Dolphins are in Redcliffe.
The Warriors do the same thing, but every other NRL club has a link. Mm. The St George, Illawarra, obviously St George, there is no area. That's about the only other one. But I've said it from the start. I just think it's disappointing that they don't want to be known as Redcliffe. If I was a Redcliffe fan, I'd be saying, well, why don't you want us on your name? Mm-hmm. You're a Redcliffe fan, Ryan.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
It doesn't bother you at all?
No, I like that they're called the Dolphins. I know, for me, they're Redcliffe, but I want other people to support them. And I think by calling the Dolphins welcomes in, I guess, a wider community of people and support base.
Guys, you talk to young people in Sydney that have no team. My two sons are both jumping on the Dolphins just because they're the Dolphins. Everybody remembers their history, but the Dolphins extend from southeast Queensland right up to the Sunshine Coast. 10,000 juniors. And all these narcs that keep writing them off. See what happens in the next few years when they become a powerhouse. Yeah. Look, just on Matt Lodge, I watched Baridi last night, and he said he's an elite front rower on his day. The unfortunate thing for Lodge is he hasn't been elite for about 4 years. Storm got rid of him. Panthers got rid of him. West Tigers got rid of him. Broncos got rid of him. Warriors got rid of him. If Robbo can work a miracle and stop this penalty machine from just giving away stupid penalties on the field, it will be a miracle. He's the most overrated front row in the comp. That's why nobody else wants to touch him.
I spoke to Robbo yesterday, just very briefly, Shane, and the deal's not done yet, but they do believe it will be done. But you're certainly right. He's certainly chewed through some clubs, hasn't he, for a bloke that came onto the scene as the next big thing as a young front rower. And you almost get the feeling, Shane, if he ends up at Bondi, this is it. This is his last chance. If this doesn't work, I don't know where else he goes.
Does it say as much about the Roosters' forward stocks, I suppose, that they might be a bit down and depleted and hollow if they're signing a guy like Matt Lodge?
Oh, no doubt they've gone to Matt Lodge because of an issue with their depth. Mm. And they're on their backside at the moment, the Roosters. It's not... It's not where they want to be in terms of their expectations every year are always so high. It's just top four every year. They don't accept anything less.
Well, even last year, they were injury ravaged and they still finished.
Still got there. They still got there.
Yeah, good on you, Shane. Great call. Thanks for calling.
See you guys.
Shane joining us this morning. Give us a call, 1353 53, the SMS 0419 767 272. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking golf with Paul Gow. Adam Pengelly will also join us before 7. And after 7 o'clock, Steve Blocker Roach will be in the studio with us. It's the Big Sports Breakfast. Just updating some scores in the cricket yesterday. Australia got underway against Sri Lanka. And by the way, how good was that tribute that Sri Lankan cricket put on for Shane Warne? Before that match started yesterday, it just really pulls on the heartstrings as an Australian to see the impact that he made on so many people around the world. It was really a beautiful touch, wasn't it?
It's still hard to believe, isn't it? Even after all these months, I still can't believe Warnie's not with us anymore. I see these knockabout Aussies over there. They had a big sheet there and they had the Shane Warne stand written over there in Sri Lanka. It was a nice touch. But, yeah, it was certainly a beautiful tribute, and I think those tributes are going to continue in every country Australia visits for the first time in the next year or two.
Well, I think Sri Lankans have a special place in their heart for Shane Warne after he helped raise $1 million to rebuild the stadium in Gaul after that tsunami and Boxing Day. And he was apparently very vocal and was very present and helped them overcome it.
I think he might have got his 500th test wicket in Sri Lanka too. Andrew Simons, I think, actually caught the ball, which in hindsight now is quite eerie.
Yeah, so just on that match yesterday in Gaul, Nathan Lyon was the star. We lost the toss and were sent into bowl, and Nathan Lyon did the job, 5 for 90. Mitchell Swepson got picked as well, so he shared in 8 wickets in total for those two spinners. So they did the job rolling Sri Lanka for 212. With the bat, Usman Khawaja and Travis Head, they got us to stumps at 3 for 98. They will resume batting on 47 and 6. So it'll be interesting to see, even though we've rolled them pretty cheaply at 212, it's what we do with the bat next. I know a lot of these batsmen have had time on these subcontinent pitches. I'm really looking forward to seeing how Cameron Green goes with the bat. He hasn't done anything with the ball in this match yet, really. But I think if he can perform well with the bat, it'll be setting him up for a great future. You know, he's obviously a much touted player.
I didn't see a lot of that, Ryan, but I'm assuming, given 13 wickets fell on day one, that it's starting to turn square. Nathan Lyon picked up 5. I think young Swepson picked up 3.
That's right.
Yeah. So certainly it's going to be a result test match. I'd say it'd be inside 3, 3.5 days the way it's going. Did notice Dave Warner in the old floppy white hat. How good's that? It was like something out of the 1980s. That shows how minimal the bounce must be if Warner's out there in the old floppy white
hat. Yeah, he took a spectacular catch as well, did Shane Warne. Now, in the tennis, Tanasi Kokkinakis, David Warner, my apologies. In Wimbledon, Tanasi Kokkinakis lost to Novak Djokovic, 6-1, 6-4, 6-2. And also this morning, Andy Murray was bailed out in 4 sets as well. Well, it's time to talk golf. And as we do each and every week, it's a pleasure to welcome in Paul Gow. Good morning, Gowie.
Yeah, good morning.
Looking forward to this Icon Series, which is pretty much Team USA versus Team Rest of the World. It's a Pro-Am tournament. And, gee, some of the players lining up in both USA and also rest of the world, there's some great names, but a couple we're very interested in from an Australian point of view and Team Rest of the World.
Yeah, there sure is. Now, the US captain is Greg Couples. He's the cool dude of the tour for years, and then the rest of the world is Ernie Earl, so that's the big easy. So I think there'll be a bit of drinking going on before and after this, especially with Ernie as the captain there. But, you know, we've got Ash Barty, George Gregan, Ricky Ponting from the Australian side for the rest of the world, AB de Villiers, Harry Kane, who plays off scratch. So he's the best player in that team. Ash plays off about 4. Ponting's on about 2 at the moment. And Greaves is about a 6. So pretty solid there. Brian Lara's in the team. But you go to the US team, they've got Michael Phelps. John Smoltz, who's the best player there. He could be actually a golf pro. He's played all those pro-ams for years. He plays off about +2. Reggie Bush and Michael Vick. So it's an interesting format, only 2 days. You can see it on Fox Sports on Friday. It's only 1 day there that they're doing it. But it's mixed up between foursomes, a little bit like the Ryder Cup, President's Cup type of thing. you know, foursomes. Then it finishes off on the last day, which you can see on Fox, is in the singles matches. So it'd be interesting. I got to interview Ash Barty a couple of nights ago about it, and she's played a lot of match play up at Brookwater at her golf course, where she is well, she won in 2020. She won the club women's club championship. So she's looking forward to it that she's going to play. And you know, Griggs is a tough competitor, and we know what Ponting's like. Well, he'll hold his side up, that's for sure.
Gowie, there's so much talk about this breakaway Saudi League, and give us an update on what's going to happen with the Ryder Cup next year with some of the players that have been excluded.
Yeah, this is interesting. Jack Johnson, who is the Ryder Cup captain for 2023, which we played in Italy, he said they will not be picking LIV players. The ones who are suspended, if they're still suspended at that time, they won't get a leg in to that. He made it quite evident yesterday, because they're picked on a point system through the US from the PGA of America, who own the event with the PGA of the Europe Tour. So that will be interesting. You have to be a member of the PGA Tour to get those ranking points, so from the PGA of America. So it's not owned by the US Tour, who are putting the sanctions on those Saudi players or the LIV players, but they won't get enough points to actually qualify. And they're sacrificing points at the moment by going and playing those LIV events when there's other events on. So, but it's a choice. Brooks Koepka, he just jumped ship after saying that at the beginning he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't move for money. Well, he's just moved for $150 million. Matt Wolf's jumped over. So Portland this week actually starts the day over there at Pumpkin Ridge. So 48-man field. I actually find no interest in it, in the sense that they've taken away the piece of golf or professional golf that is of interest, is that you can work for 5 days and not actually get paid. So you don't make the cut, you don't get paid. Where in these 54-hole events, you get paid regardless. So the level of golf is going to be, it's just going to diminish. It's just going to go down.
Gary, the John Deere Classic, I think that kicks off today, doesn't it? Who wins, if you're having a little sneaky bet, and who's your roughie?
Yeah, we'll be definitely having a sneaky bet, Bulldog. Yeah, it starts tomorrow morning early. I like Scott Stallings, come off a 63 last week. I had the Travelers Championships. He's had 5 top 10s here and 7th starts. Yeah, he's only at $26, but it's worth having a little something on. We've got a bunch of Aussies playing this week, and the field is pretty weak. It's a week to have off. The Open Championships is in a couple of weeks' time, so it's next week. So it's actually it's a good time to take some rest time to get ready for the Open Championships, take that trip, get over and play the Scottish Open before. So we've got a few players that are heading over there to play the Scottish Open, the Genesis Scottish Open, which is Mark Leishman. Adam Scott will probably be teeing it up in there. But we've got Mark Hensby, Greg Chalmers, Brett Drewitt, John Sendon. So, but my pick out of the Aussies is Jason Day. Yeah, I think he's just trending. I've been saying it all year. I think he's just getting better and better. He's always liked the limelight, but he's been out of the limelight for quite some time because he's been injured and not playing so well, but he's slowly getting back, and we see like that in a lot of professional athletes. So I like Jay Day this week. As my roughie at $34, which is not that rough, is Kristen Bautista, who he's a rookie. He's had 7 top 10s or top 25s this season, and I think because the field is so weak, somebody from the not out of one of the decent names is going to come through here.
So you've got Scott Stallings as your winner. He's $26. Christian, so how did you pronounce his name again?
It's a tough one. Boustenhout.
He's $34. You mentioned he's got a lot of top 10, so he's $4.25 for the top 10. And Jason Day, well, he's been backed into $26. So you've got your eye in too, Gowie. There was a lot of people on the text line giving you a lot of love. You tipped Matt Fitzpatrick for the US Open.
Yeah, you know, you occasionally get one right here and there if you have enough goes. But, yeah, he's a good young player. So if you're a Fitzpatrick fan, yeah, going to the Open Championships in a couple of weeks' time, he's a big chance. I've already had a couple of early bets on Mark Leishman and Xander Schauffele. And before Schauffele won last week, I've had a little something on him. I think it's his time to shine. And at St Andrews, it could be his golf course, the way he matches his way around the golf course. He's one of those guys that's very similar to a David DeVal. When he starts winning, I think he'll win a lot. And so his time's got to be coming. And who knows, it could be in a couple of weeks' time.
Gary, left field question. Excuse me. Who's the best golfer you've seen who isn't a professional golfer from a rival sport? Like you look at a Glenn Maxwell, a Ricky Ponting. Who's the best one you've come across from a rival sport that actually is a genuine star golfer?
Well, he was on the show. He's on my show this week on Fox Sports. Is Greg Blewett by far? He's the
what does he play off?
Currently plays off one or two, but he's been down as low as plus two or plus three. Plays in the Pennant side. In Adelaide there. He's just a man, he can play. I played with him in a pro-am about 10 years ago at the Australian Open at New South Wales. On the Wednesday, it was a bit blowy. He shot one under par. The best pro score that day was two under par. There's only three or four people break par, and he was one of them. And he could play, and I had him on the show, and he sort of shied it off a little bit that he wasn't that good, but he can play. He's got all the attributes to do it. He's a bit older now, but, if he didn't have such a good media career over there with Triple M and a few things he does in cricket, he possibly could have been one of those guys who could have played, Champions Tour or something a little bit, over here, the Legends Tour. He could have played that, and I think he would have made some money. If we look back at players that did turn the professional, Scott Draper, I ran into him last week in Brisbane, and he plays out of the Indooroopilly Club, and he turned pro, won a small tournament in Australia, and then he's got his amateur status back now, but he could definitely play.
Yeah, well, by the sound of that, we need to get Greg Blewett in Team Rest of the World for the Icon Series next year. It'd be great to see him up amongst some of those great sporting names that'll take place, as you mentioned, this Friday. We can watch that on Fox Sports. Good on you, Gowie. Great to chat, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks a lot.
And just on Gowie's tips for the John Deere Classic, just recapping those, he's saying that his winner is Scott Stallings at $26. His roughie is Christian Bisonhoot at $34. And his best Australian will be Jason Day at $26. Adam Pengelly coming up shortly. It's the Big Sports Breakfast. Looking forward to the next hour with Steve Blocker-Roach. He's already come into the studio just like a big bluster of wind, hasn't he? He brings in this energy. He's up and about. By gee, you've got to stay tuned after 7.
You guys should have seen him when he was hosting the show last Friday. He was filling in for Loz. And at 5:25, he walked out and yelled out, "Let's go!" And I've never seen Clarkie and Mido run so quickly into the studio before.
Clarkie be thinking, who is this bloke?
People are going to be excited too because he got the multi up last week.
He did, $13. So people will be expecting him to go back to back, or is he going to be a one hit wonder?
Yeah, I don't know. We might have to talk him into it by the sound of it.
He's like a human cyclone. He just goes, and then he leaves, and there's all paper all over the floor, and there's all furniture that's.
But everyone's so excited and up and about after he's done that.
Well, you know who else will be champing at the bit? Adam Pengelly, because he was a late scratching yesterday because his kids were ill. I hope everything's okay. Okay, Adam, good morning.
Morning, Ryan. Morning, guys. Can't do much about this time of year, can we, Ryan, unfortunately. So quick trip to the doctor yesterday, big dose of antibiotics for both the kids, and let's hope they can improve the next couple of days. So I'll apologise about yesterday.
No, good stuff. Great
You're
to have
gonna
you
You're not going
to
chuck it on the invoice still, are you, mate?
No.
I know what you like with money.
I'm honest. No invoice.
Okay.
No invoice.
I know a couple of the bosses are away and I thought you might want to sneak it through.
Yeah, sneak one through, eh?
All right.
Let's talk racing, Adam. Think it over. We just saw this horse over the last couple of seasons just grow into one of the better weight-for-age stars of Australia. We know he's strong over the mile. There were some questions of him over 2,000 metres, but he proved the doubters wrong, and now he's targeting the Cox Plate.
Yeah, that's right, Ryan. So obviously Kerry Parker. He likes to keep Think It Over in Sydney last spring. He always had those big bonus races going all the way through the Hill Stakes and the Craven Plate and the Rose Hill Gold Cup, but he's got him back in work now and has firmly identified the Cox Plate as the main mission later in the spring. So would have the chance to go down there last year, decided against it. And the revelation that he was throughout the Autumn Carnival, obviously winning that amazing Queensland Stakes on National Wheelers Ride, they've decided to sort of kick off in Sydney with a couple of runs, maybe target the Winx Stakes first up, and then head down to Melbourne and all roads lead to the Cox Plate. So with a bit of a dearth in our weight for age ranks, you could say at this stage at the moment, they're very much up in the air. Looks like a really suitable race, and obviously targeting the prestige later this year in the spring.
Adam, can you give us an update on Chris Munns? We know Melbourne Cup winning jockey turned trainer. He's been charged by Queensland stewards, and this was off the back of an incident in 2020, but also CCTV footage emerged at his stables at Eagle Farm.
Yeah, that's right, Jamie. So this issue's been going on for the best part of 18 months, almost close to 2 years, and he's been charged as well as his son, as well, with administering an alkalising agent to a horse in his stables going back the best part of almost 2 years. And now stewards up there in Queensland have used CCTV footage to try and bring the matter to a head. It's obviously dragged on for a very, very long time. I must stress that Chris is vehemently fighting the charges at the moment, along with his son, Corey. So we'll wait and see how that plays out. It's certainly been a very big week for integrity up there in Queensland. A couple of their high-profile trainers, like Robert Heathcote and Chris Munts, both in the spotlight, so to speak. Let's hope we can get a resolution on this in the not-too-distant future.
Looking at Rosehill Racing on Saturday, Adam, I'm sure you're still probably getting for the form 10 races on that particular meeting, and D'Andretti is to be a headline act.
Yeah, we're deep into winter racing, aren't we, Ryan, at the moment? So a lot of benchmark racing, and we're not quite sure how a lot of these horses sort of progress later in their campaigns heading towards the early part of the spring. But no doubt she's a headline act, D'Andretti, the little sister to Libertini. She made a huge impression winning her debut at Hawkesbury going back to last year, and then obviously was first up into the Fury Stakes in the spring. And off only the one run, she was very heavily backed in that race and then pulled up with some issues, only beat a couple of horses home, had a virus. Now, Ronnie Quinton's decided to give her a very long spell to try and let her get over that. She missed the rest of the spring, she missed the entire autumn as well. So she's pretty much, her three-year-old season has been a write-off. But he's going to give her a run or two at the end of the season now. She'll obviously tackle a benchmark 72 at Rosehill there on the weekend, provided she doesn't get a run in the midway there. So we'll see how she measures up. But she's one of these horses that could go on, race for the next month or two, and try and catch a bit of some of these other horses on the hop at the start of the spring with a bit of fitness edge. So very keen to see how she goes under Andrew Atkins there at Rosehill on the weekend, and certainly a horse to watch from what we've seen at the trial so far this campaign.
Yeah, and I don't know whether you caught any of the racing yesterday from the Kenzo, Adam, but did you happen to catch the run of Airman in the first race for the Hawks camp?
Yeah, I saw it very briefly, Ryan. I was off yesterday with the kids all day, so I must admit I didn't have much of a bet. But I did see the run of Airman very quickly at the start of the day. He's a nice horse, obviously, going forward as a maiden, obviously, on debut. So a couple of nice trials. We'll see where he ends up later in his campaign. But not uncommon for the Hawks to have these horses at the back end of their two-year-old season start to flourish and mature, heading towards their three-year-old year. So from what we've seen so far at the trials, those famous colours, he might be a horse to follow going forward. But that was a big win there at the Kenzo track yesterday.
Adam, I just wanted to ask you about an article that you've got in today's paper, just about the PGA of Australia. They're supporting the US and Europe, and this is just regarding that Greg Norman's breakaway Saudi tour.
Yeah, this is fascinating, Jamie. The PGA of Australia have not made their stance clear at all in the last month or so about the LIV Golf and Greg Norman's Saudi-backed tour. It also have implications for down here in Australia, because we're heading towards the summer of golf, and our two biggest tournaments down here, the Australian Open and the Australian PGA, are both co-sanctioned by the DP World Tour, which is formerly the European Tour. So a lot of people are wondering, saying, well, if the European Tour comes out and bans a lot of these golfers from playing in the European Tour events, does that mean we can't have these guys coming back to play in Australia for our two big events? Because we have a very, very short window there in Australia to showcase our best events. So the PGA of Australia came out last night and said that we're supporting the US, we're supporting the DP World Tour, and the stance they're taking against Greg Norman's LIV Golf. So they haven't come out and firmly said they're going to ban golfers from our big events later in the year, but it's a fascinating sort of, I suppose, story to watch, because our events in Australia will be here before we know it, in sort of November and the start of December. And obviously with Greg Norman, his name's linked to the major Australian golf award, the Greg Norman Medal too. So I don't know how that's all going to play out, given the fact that they've sort of turned their back a little bit in some respects on his new tour. So definitely a watch this space, it must be said.
Adam, Manly Melbourne, the big one, Brookie tonight. Who wins and why?
Good question, Doggy. I think I'll say Melbourne in a tight one. I know Munch is going to be out tonight with that shoulder problem, but I just think they've probably still got a couple of too many guns for Manly at the moment. Obviously, with Papenhuyzen coming back, it should be a fascinating game. And Manly, it's a huge, huge game for them, isn't it, Doggy, tonight? Because they're just seeing that clump of teams on the edge of the eight there with the Rabbitohs, the Dragons, the Roosters, the Raiders, and they need to try and rack up these wins. I know it's a very awkward game, sort of 4 days after Origin, a lot of their better players flying back across from Perth, but it's a huge game tonight. I'm going to tip Melbourne 1-12 in a really close game.
Good on you, Adam. Thanks for joining us this morning.
See you guys. Chat tomorrow.
Now, if you haven't had your morning coffee so far, don't worry about it, because we've got about 6 cups of coffee coming up in the next hour in the shape of Steve Blocker Roach. Stay with us on the Big Sports Breakfast.